I'm really honored to be here today and to be a part of this panel. And I'm really pleased to see so many people here and who can sit this long and listen to all of us. We thank you for being here. I'm going to hold this up. I guess I'm a little taller here. I'm going to hold this up here. Can you hear me better now? Yeah. I'm especially pleased to be here in participating with the people on this panel, and even more so with two people on this panel who made it possible for me to even be here today, because they're the people who really helped me 20-some years ago to make my change, and that is Dr. Lois Nelson and Barry Guitar, Dr. Barry Guitar, people who cared about me at the time, showed me strategies and techniques to use, were understanding with me, and I was able to make a major change at that time. Also, I had a lot of public school speech therapy, as most of us have had up here. And even though at that time I wasn't able to be cured of my stuttering, if you will, I wasn't able to make significant change at the time, I feel like Carl Dell so often says, my experience was, I think, identical to him. The public school clinicians that I had were people who I believe set the groundwork for me to make the changes that I was able to make later on, because they were the only people that I had who I could talk to about stuttering, for one thing. And all of them, and I think without exception, although I don't remember all of them, that was a long, long time ago, but my memory is that they were all very supportive of me and at least gave me a forum to talk, and they all tried to help me, and some of them were more successful than others. My point is that even though I didn't maybe make the dramatic change I would like to have at that time, the experience that I had with them set the groundwork for me, I believe, making the more obvious changes later on in my life. There's another person who played a role in my coping of stuttering, and that is my mother. My mother is a person who stutters, and stuttered moderately to severely all of her life. She is still living. She's in her 80s now, she's a twin, and had a great deal of stuttering. And even though we didn't talk about stuttering a whole lot, and if I could somehow do that over again, I would have maybe been more helpful in creating that experience of sharing and talking more. But she didn't talk with me a whole lot about it because she didn't want to embarrass me. And I didn't want to talk about it a whole lot with her because I didn't have the maturity, and also I didn't want to embarrass her. But one of the things that she said to me throughout my life, which was very, very important and really fed into the therapy that for me worked, she would say to me, "Peter, don't run from your stuttering." When she would see me not want to make the phone call, when she would see me make up excuses for not doing things, she obviously knew what was happening. She would tell me over and over again, even though you're embarrassed about this and even though you're very frustrated by it, you need to do it. Don't run from your stuttering. The more you run from it, the worse it will become. And I at the time I didn't understand that she was correct, but I certainly have learned that since then. I listed a number of factors on a handout. I brought 150 of them. I had no idea we would have well over double that amount of people. Some of you have those handouts. I've listed a number of factors on there that, in my view, were important for me to make my personal change. One obvious one that's been mentioned by a number of people up here is motivation. I made a significant change in my early 20s, quite honestly, because I was becoming desperate. I, like some other folks up here, when I turned 16, I didn't outgrow it. When I turned the next magical milestone, which was 18, which meant I could drink beer in Wisconsin, I still didn't outgrow my stuttering. I was still stuttering. And when I reached 21, when I could then drink hard liquor, that didn't help either. I still was stuttering, so I never outgrew stuttering. So once I was aware that it wasn't going to happen on its own and that I needed to take much more responsibility, that was major for me, and desperation played a role in that. Sometimes when I'm being more open with my students and talking about some factors that I believe are important for them to know about, I might say to them, sometimes I like to see the person walk through the door who's desperate, because many times those are the people who are ready to make the change and do make a change. They're willing to do what it takes They're willing to do some of the difficult things that have been mentioned up here in order to make the change. So I was highly motivated at that time. Plus, I just I was in my early 20s, and I was in the military first. I went into the military when I was 19 years old, and that was back in the mid-60s. And I had a number of experiences in Uncle Sam's Marine Corps that weren't very real positive for me, that helped me believe that the only way I could make a change is by really working hard at it and doing it myself. So that fit into this process of change as well. One of the experiences that I had that was a life-changing experience for me involved avoidance. That is, when I was 19 years old, going back to that military experience, when I was 19 years old, I was going to college only part-time, and I was working part-time, and that was during the big Vietnam buildup. And so what happened literally overnight is there were 500,000 men that were drafted, and I was one of those people that got a draft notice. Again, I was 19 years old at the time. That was before the lottery. They typically didn't draft males until you were 25 or 26 under the old system, so I never thought I would get it. But I got a draft notice overnight. So to make a long story short, I report for my physical, and although I was in good shape physically, I had to fill out a form, and on the form they would ask you a number of questions. One of the questions was, do you have a stuttering problem? It was a routine form that everybody filled out. Well, I checked off that I had a stuttering problem. I really didn't want to go in the military at that time, especially since it was acceptable then to get out of it if you could. It wasn't looked down on like it might have been during World War II and maybe even since then. But I checked off in the form that I was a person who stuttered. So 5 minutes later, I'm standing before the examining psychiatrist. And you have to remember that I was so embarrassed and frustrated about my stuttering that I would avoid stuttering as much as I possibly could. And sometimes I was successful at that. I would change words. I would circumlocute. I would give short answers. I would pause for a longer period of time when I was silently working through my stuttering. I wasn't stuttering audibly, but I was doing internalized kinds of stuttering in order to try to conceal it. So I'm standing before him, and I knew that all I had to do was stutter, and I would be given a 4F, which I wanted on one hand, and then on the other hand, to do that, I had to really expose my stuttering. So I'm standing there before this man, and he's asking me a couple questions, and I'm answering him with short answers, holding back stuttering, knowing that all I needed to do was stutter. I was so embarrassed and frustrated about stuttering that even in front of this psychiatrist, I refused to let my stuttering show to the degree that I would have needed to let it show in order to get out of the military. As a result, he said to me, "I think you will do fine in the Army, son." So an hour later then, after I'm inducted, my next big shock was, and I'm standing there with 135 guys, and they needed 7 volunteers for the Marine Corps, and nobody volunteered. So they at random chose 7 of us, and I was one of them, and I got drafted into the Marine Corps then. So after going through that experience and learning that life can indeed be tough, I think that's another factor that also fed into my ability to make a change. Well, once I went through all of that and got out and went to college, it really, really did help me with my schooling, because when things got tough, I had this little sign that I had in front of me that would say, "When things get tough, just think of what it used to be like." That motivated me a lot, and that also motivated me a lot in working mainly with Lois on my speech. Caring, knowledgeable clinicians, very, very important. I would not have been able to make the kind of changes that I was able to make had I not had people who had knowledge about stuttering, people who I knew could put the stuttering in their mouth, if they could put in their mouth what they were asking me to do when we were working on pre-block corrections and block corrections and post-block corrections, whatever, a confrontation of stuttering, for them to be able to explain that to me in a way that was acceptable. At that time, it was helpful for me to have people who stuttered who had made the change. I do not think that everybody needs that. For me, that was important at the time. However, I know a number of clinicians who are non-stutterers who are excellent stuttering therapists. But at that time, the fact that I had a couple of people who had been through it was very, very motivating for me as well. Caring, supportive clinicians, in my view, is imperative. And I've been lucky to have a number of those in my lifetime in the public schools as well, as I had mentioned before. A big factor for me, another ingredient that fed in to my ability, I think, to make some changes, and I alluded to this before, was confronting stuttering. All my life I'd tried to run from stuttering. You run from anything that you're afraid of, and typically whatever it is that you're afraid of takes on more strength. It becomes more powerful, and stuttering is no exception to that. I had had a lot of fluency shaping, and I had some temporary success with that, but I was never taught until later on how to deal with the stuttering when it happened, because obviously fluency shaping didn't cure me, so I had stuttering. But once I learned how to deal with the stuttering, to grab onto the stuttering, to stutter more easily, that's been mentioned up here a number of times, to try to hang in there with the stuttering, that was another, in my view, an imperative factor that helped me a great deal in making the change. And not only confronting stuttering, but then learning techniques to do something with it when I confronted it. I no longer had a stutter like this with the secondaries. I learned that I could stutter, and stutter a little more easily and with much less severity. So techniques like that, again, for me, were very, very important. Learning that a lot of what I did when I stutter, and this comes directly from Dean Williams, in fact, I included a quote in here as well, big factor was learning that what I did when I stutter often resulted from my attempts not to stutter. So once that was something that I understood, I was able to make increased changes in my view. That understanding that when we stutter, we're interfering with a normal speech production process. Again, as Dean Williams as it comes, that was a breakthrough for me. What I do in my treatment now is one of the first things that I do in an elementary form is my clients learn about normal speech production. They learn about the importance of airflow. They learn about the importance of vocal cord vibration and the whole voicing process. They learn what happens when we push too hard with a bilabial. They have to first learn a normal speech production system so they can indeed understand how they interfere with that system. It's a physical system, and there's rhyme and reason behind it. Particularly when we push hard, closing off the air in the voicing, we can learn not to do that as people who stutter. So that was very important for me. Another factor for me that was helpful, and this was also mentioned up here a little more indirectly, was learning how to monitor my speech more proprioceptively as opposed to auditorily. Proprioceptively simply means monitoring one's speech tactically and kinesthetically, and knowing how to do that, and it's not an easy task to learn at all, it takes some time to do it, but learning when you are pushing with your tongue too hard, learning when you are pushing with your lips too much. I see a lot of people who stutter, and including me when I was younger, and you see almost nothing in the literature about this, but I see it all the time. You see people who stutter who do a lot of clenching. They don't open up their mouth very much. That's part of the inhibition process, I think, that they've learned over the years in trying not to stutter. They're part of the holding back process. And so proprioception allowed me to also open up my mouth a little bit more like the rest of you do when you talk, because I was doing it abnormally in the other direction. And I see that with a lot of adult people who stutter. So the proprioception helped me not only taste and feel, if you will, speech, but also it helped me with rate control, because when you open up your mouth a little bit more, it takes milliseconds longer, so you automatically slow down, so it helps with rate. And it also helps with knowing ahead of time when you're going to stutter, you can keep your cool enough to slide into it much more easily, because physically you cued into it as well as cognitively. I think that's an important process. Another big one, and this has been mentioned a number of times up here, is the importance of disclosing the fact that I'm somebody who stutters. That is very therapeutic for me, because what have I done all my life, and I think most of us up here are for many years did this, we tried to be what we weren't, a fluent speaker. We tried our best to conceal the stuttering, to hide the stuttering. This is the first time I've come up in a talk, and I give many, many talks throughout the year, the first time that I've come up where I haven't immediately said I'm somebody who stutters, and this is what I'm going to be doing. Once I do that, I can be very fluent through the whole talk, just getting it out in the open. It makes me feel more comfortable. It gives me permission to use techniques like that when I have to go ahead and do some voluntary stuttering on occasion, although I'm not near as good at it as Barry is. Plus, it makes my audience, my listener, in my view, feel more comfortable because it's out in the open, it's been addressed. The last one here, experiencing more fluency and controlled stuttering, and I use both of those words, in situations that I couldn't do that in before. That was real imperative for me in my early 20s, to gradually be more and more successful in talking in situations that I had difficulty with before. Imperative in my change. Again, when I want to end this by saying, these are for Peter. This is what helped me. This is what worked for me. It doesn't work for everybody. Again, thank you all for coming too.